In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Franchise Players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com. WWBG 1470 AM, part of the TGIF lineup that you get every Friday afternoon from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And if you miss Franchise Players over there, you can catch the replay over on WTOB 96.7 FM and 980 AM. Desmond Johnson here. I'm your host every Friday afternoon, getting you ready for things going on in the world of sports here in the Triad and points beyond. Kicking off the show today, we got Candace Cooper, host of Locked On ACC podcast. Talk a little ACC hoops. We got a couple of teams still alive playing in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, my Tar Heels, they've got questions. They got big questions. we're gonna discuss with them in just a bit. Also, a little bit later on in the show, Kevin Avery from the Four Man Rush podcast on with us discussing the latest in free agency from the Carolina Panthers. And in an exclusive unaired segment from The Rundown with Desmond Johnson, which airs on Saturday mornings over on WWBG from late last week, Believe in Bears host Joey Christopoulos joined me to discuss the ramifications of the Panthers actually trading up to number one with the Chicago Bears and what it means for both teams. So we got a loaded show today. Happy that Candace is able to kick things off with us. And let's just start off with them boys from Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm in a couple of brackets, group brackets or whatnot. And I picked Furman on like half of them to win. And I felt really good about it, even though I don't think I've seen Furman this year. I have seen Virginia up close. I watched Virginia Saturday night at the Greensboro Coliseum live, probably about 30 feet in front of me. And they just can't score. Like, I don't understand why Tony Bennett hasn't changed his recruiting around. Or is the recruiting? What are your thoughts when you watch Virginia play basketball? Because it's been like this for like 5 years now, it feels like.
Yeah, 100%. Like this year, though, I think they had a lot of players that had flashing moments where you said, okay, when they want to turn it on, they're great. But it wasn't just like a consistent all around, everybody can shoot, anybody could get it type energy. And I think defensively, they've held on to being like, we're just this tough, nobody can score against us team. But when that goes bad and sour, like what can you give on the other side of the ball? And I think that's been, you know, Virginia's Achilles heel, truly. It's crazy to me how we're so hyped for Tony Bennett throughout the season. Like he can outcoach the best of them. He can, you know, have all of these second half adjustments. And then when it comes to March Madness, it's like, oh, well, he's just not good. He's crap, like blah, blah, blah. It's quick how they turn on you, right? It's insane.
Especially nowadays, people will turn on you. Look at Caleb Love. We'll get to him in just a second. He went from, he lived long enough to become the villain, pretty much. That's pretty much what happened. So we're going to get to the strange case of Caleb Love. Just a bit. Virginia was a 4 seed. Falling to Furman. I listened to most of it on Sirius XM yesterday while I was running around. Got home in time to see the last little bit of it. People need to remember, it's the same situation as Caleb Love. People need to remember Kehi Clark actually threw that pass to the dude whose name I can't pronounce when they beat Purdue in the Elite Eight to move on in the year they won the championship. Yeah. And he is basically rode off of that the rest of his career, pretty much. It feels like he's been in Virginia for 8 years. And then this happens to him. I've watched that play over and over and over. And I heard it in the car when it first happened. So I hadn't seen it. And when I watched it over and over again, it was like, I can't figure out what he's doing. Like I thought he thought there was less time on the clock, so he was just trying to throw the ball as far away as possible from the Purdue goal. But then when you watch it, it looks like he's actually trying to throw it to the Virginia player and he just doesn't throw it far enough. What do you think happened?
You know, I think first and foremost, you had a timeout, right? So I think that's where we start. My guy, you are the floor general. You are the manager. You're supposed to know how many timeouts you got, what the play could be, all the things. That's part one. Part two is you're supposed to be the leader who is cool under pressure. He's always been, to me, a cool under pressure type. Like, he doesn't get too flustered. That was a very flustered, panicked, I just want to make sure I stay here type of play. And I think that's something that he's going to be sick and live with himself for, you know, however long it has to be. On top of that, though, you know, you have a guy like Pegs who has not been shooting well the entire game. This is a team that, you know, averages 80 points. If there was ever time to make a three, that was it. It was just, that's just how March Madness goes, right? Like, you can't write a better script. And I think as much as we want to put in stock on plays and draws and all the things, it's kind of just like, it just wasn't your day. And I think we can chalk it up to that. But hopefully, like, you know, you saw Shedrick walk into the locker room and be like, we had a timeout. And it's just, it gave me flashbacks. Well, I wasn't born, but, you know, things I've seen of Michigan, Chris Webber, and just, you know, things like that.
92? You weren't born when the
I was born, but like, I wasn't born. I was born, but I wasn't like, oh, I know what March Madness is and all the things.
Meanwhile, I'm in high school, like, right, and that's my squad, and I'm following around. And,
you had the bald head because of Jalen Rose. I get it. I get
there
it.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. They put it all the black church socks, the whole thing, man. Like, they had it going on. Duke, a five seed, completely smashed Oral Roberts. I actually watched most of that game on television last night. 74-51 winners. Not last night, but last night, Thursday night. I'm struggling because I watched Duke. I went to the Duke Virginia ACC championship game at the Coliseum Saturday and watched that game. And both the same things that have been happening over the past couple of months pretty much happened to both Duke and Virginia. Virginia went like 8 minutes without a field goal when Furman switched their all they did was switch their defense. And like Virginia,
it was 50 and 38 at one point. And it's kind of like, that's a put away game. And that's where you say to yourself, all right, what's going on, Tony Bennett? Why can't the guys figure it out? And that was certainly frustrating. But on the flip side for Duke, you say to yourself, all right, I hate it because of Carolina girl, of course, but they look good. And they remind me of us from
last year a little bit.
Yeah. Like, the 5-12 seed, they were like an actual 5-12 seed game. Some of these games we've seen so far, it's like, all right, you know, it's a crapshoot.
That 12 is not a 12. Right? Yeah. Actually, I don't think Duke is a 5. Duke feels like they're a 2, like, honestly.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And it makes it scary. It makes it scary because in a year when I feel like it's anybody's, like, you can't sit here and tell me beyond Alabama that this is a surefire shoot for anybody. And even Alabama has looked, you know, fraudulent at times. So if there was ever a year for Duke to win this damn thing, like, this is going to be the year. And then you're going to have Shire. And it's set up for that. It's just set up for that. Because they're like, oh, look, we did what y'all couldn't. Like, it's just set up. I just have something in my feeling. Something's tingling in my spidey sense.
That's a great segue for the rivalry because that's been in the back of my mind. Like, because that's the way the rivalry's always been. Like, Carolina goes to the final, then Duke goes next year, vice versa, that kind of thing. Carolina made it last year.
Crazy.
It would be Duke's turn. And you can go all the way back until like the 90s, really, where, you know, Duke won the 2 back to back. Carolina goes right behind him in 93. Duke goes right after that to the national championship in 94. Carolina's in the Final Four in 95 and 96. Like, it's one of them usually all the time. And after what happened last year, I was curious because it's such a young team. There's 7 freshmen on this Duke team, but I don't think you can really call them freshmen anymore. It's really true. I think Dean Smith, you say it all the time, that you're not really freshmen after like March or whatever of that year. And 100%. These guys, Filipowski and these boys, they're balling. I got to give them credit. And I didn't think John Shire was going to be this good this early. But after watching Hubert struggle with our kids and seeing John get these young kids to meld with these grad students and some transfers and this and that, I would give them a shot to get to the Final Four. I don't think I picked them all in my bracket. I think I got Tennessee beating them, but we'll see. Duke still got a little ways to go, but they looked good coming out. Let's turn our attention to Chapel Hill. Before I get you out of here, what I wanted to do was play a little game called Stay or Go with Candace Cooper. And how we're going to do this, I'm going to name a player from the University of North Carolina men's basketball team that as of this taping is still on the roster. And you're going to tell us whether or not you feel it's in the best interest of that player to either stay or to go. Follow Candace and the Locked On ACC podcast at Locked On ACC. So let's get this thing going. Let's start off with soon to be junior wing forward DeMarco Dunn. Should he stay or should he go and walk?
I think he should. God, this is going to be hard. I think. I think he should stay because he has a talent. I would say go because he's not getting exposed in the way that he could be.
Wait, so wait, which one? Do you think he should stay or you think he should go? Because you said both.
I would like him to stay, but I would not be surprised if he goes.
All right, that's a cute way to get around. Fair
weather, you know. Okay.
I don't personally, for me, I'm gonna play along with you too. Personally, yeah. I think he stays. I don't think he has a reason to go.
Right.
And the next guy's gonna be in the same category for me because DeMarco came in as what, like a 3-star, 4-star kid from North Carolina. I'm sure his dream has been to play for Carolina his entire life. Exactly. Where's he gonna transfer to? Like any place you go to is gonna be a lower level exposure than just playing off the bench for Carolina. Now,
absolutely.
I'm old school. I'm more of the long lines of instead of going someplace so you can get playing time, how about you work on your game so you can play here? play, like, you know, over the summer, what else you got to do? You know,
yeah,
work on your game. Work on your game so Hubert can't deny you. You know, that's really the main issue I've seen with people not getting off the bench. And I had heard, for those that had not heard, Tyler Nickel transferred not because of dissatisfaction with the program or anything. His girlfriend is pregnant. He wanted to move closer to be with her, and she's up in Virginia. So that's why he transferred back out. He knows he can find some place in Virginia to play, and it's a better situation for his family.
Probably at UVA itself.
Virginia Tech. I would not be surprised to see Tyler Nickel at Virginia next year under Tony Bennett. He's the highest scoring player in Virginia high school history. So maybe that's the cure for what we were talking about with Virginia earlier. Maybe it's Tyler Nickel. That would make me feel really like that just made my stomach turn a little bit like, should he stay or should he go? Dontrez Styles, same situation as DeMarco Dunn. Why do you think you got to go?
Stop letting him play with you, man. You have way too much talent. Way too much talent. You sitting on that bench. I'm sick of it. Sick of it. I think he needs to free that man. Free that man. I'm like, the flashes that I see make me. I don't understand what you're not seeing in practice of him to give him more burn. Like I just don't.
It's got
to
be defense. It's got to be his defense. If Hubert says it in his press conferences all the time, if they don't play defense in practice, they're not going to play.
Who plays defense?
That's a good point.
Who's playing defense? He might as well try to throw something else out there. Like I remember when Roy used to sit guys down because it wasn't happening. And I'm talking about starters when they won't go for him. Sit their tail down, give people who are coming off the bench an opportunity. And I just feel like Dontrez showed up big during the tournament. Like, we got to give him more love than this. He deserves better. So I would say go. But I mean, I want him to stay, of course. But nah, go ahead, bro.
He should start next year, shouldn't he? Like, shouldn't it be between him and Puff? Like, right there at the three? Because it seems like Puff's in his way.
Is Puff on your list? Because I would like to go. Go.
Actually, he's not on my list, but we can put him on there. Puff, I didn't even hear about Puff going anywhere, but Puff Johnson.
I don't care if you don't go, but you don't need to be playing no more. Just sit his ass down. Like
they seem to play better when he's in, but he's not available all the time. That's his problem. He's always hurt like every third game.
The best ability is availability. He borderline is on Justin McCoy type time for me where I'm like, no, thank you. You come in and I'm like, sit down. I'm glad. I am not sad about Justin McCoy leaving. I think he's a nice enough kid, but like,
I completely forgot he transferred.
Like, see what I'm saying? See what I'm saying? He's an afterthought, you know?
McCoy was different. McCoy wouldn't get off the bench. He played that last year with Roy where they were thinned out roster wise. And I think he was starting that year, like for most of it.
He had his one shining moment. He did that dunk during the ACC tournament. And like, I'm glad he has that highlight. I love that for him. Gone back away.
He came in from Virginia, so he might have went back that direction. Maybe he's. I don't know if you can transfer back to a school that you transferred out of. I've never seen that.
Cam Kelly for football. He did that. That's what he's doing. Mm-hmm.
So maybe he goes back to Virginia too. Stay or go, Carolina edition. Let's just get to the big three. Armando Bacot. He's got a COVID year remaining on draft boards. He's not showing he's going to get drafted. Should Armando stay or should he go?
I mean, he's going to stay because he needs the money and he knows that he's going to be in Barcelona if he doesn't, but I would love for him to go.
I had that echoed by a lot of other fans. The further away I am from it, I'm not sure because there's really nobody coming in this upcoming class. He only has like two commits. One of them, Simeon Wilcher, and I feel like he might play a hand in what's about to happen with these next two names I say, but the other kid, I can't remember who the other kid is. I think he's like a lower 3-4-star kid.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's really nobody. They're going to have to go deep in the portal and some other things unless some of these guys stay behind.
I'd rather it be a group crop of kids that all have to come in and learn together and figure it out than have this quote unquote one superstar who he's telling them like they, if they don't want to be here, quit type energy, if they don't want to blah, blah, blah. Like it's giving isolation. It's giving, you know, Gladys and the Pips. It's giving Diana Ross and the, you know, Supreme. Like, I don't like it. I don't love it. I think he's going about his way.
I think he's staying. I agree.
And I hate, and I'm pissed. And I'm pissed.
Yeah.
I'm pissed. I mean, like, all of that hype for the Outer Banks, and I watched that show for his line to be money pissed me off. And so, honestly, on top of that, I'm over him.
He was on for like two seconds.
He was on for two seconds. He held his hands just like this and said, me. Yeah. I said, pay me. What did I do wrong in this life? My NIL did not reach
half a mil. I want an NIL deal too.
Like, come on, bro.
Soon to be senior point guard RJ Davis, should he stay or should he go?
Please stay. I think that he could really be something great. About all the guards that we've seen come through North Carolina, like, I really feel like he has that dog in him. He showed that in the tournament. He gave so much fight that it pissed me off for him, right? How well he was playing. And I think if he's able to be, hey, you're this team's leader, you're running the show, you're running point, which honestly segues into my next guy, Caleb should go. I think RJ should stay and be the leader. Caleb, whatever, we can get right to it. God bless you. I really think that you have been, I will always have Final Four at Dreamville watching you make that shot. I will forever love you, but it's no.
He probably should have left after last year in hindsight. And he probably thinks that now too, just from, I will say this. I'm on the same boat. I think it's time. Caleb probably needs to go ahead and go. I heard BDOT say this on the radio the other day, though. It would hurt my heart to see him playing collegiate ball someplace else. Like, you went to Missouri or something like that.
I'd be all right. I'd be okay. Like, I want him to go be successful. Try Slug where? He's going to Barcelona with Armando.
Overseas. Go overseas or something. Make a little bit of money there. Come back over here at 23, 24. There's a G League here. I mean, there's paths to get there.
I think he'd be a great two-way player. I think that he has to learn, or whoever is in his camp, like, it has to have a come to Jesus in terms of shot selection. Like, people want to have, like, you make the NBA not only because of your natural talent, but sometimes it's because of how smart you are on the court and how decision-making plays into your being able to pass to, you know, the greats, the Giannis's, the KD's. Can you facilitate and get those guys the shots instead of taking it by yourself? If he can't learn to do that, he is going to have a limited career, period. Like, it's just point blank, period. If I can't trust you not to do something silly, and I might not, if I have the, you know, more chutzpah than I feel like Hubert has at times, I'm sitting your ass down. Like, it's just that's just it.
Dean used to sit the whole starting lineup down, you know what I mean, and put the white team. He put the whole bench, like the ones that never got, not the white team, but the blue white team. You know what I'm saying? The bench warmers. Come on now. You know, the blue white scrimmage game that they have. The blue team's usually the starters. The white team, anyway, he would put in the back end of the bench for like a minute just to let the starters know, hey, this is real. Hubert, I don't think Hubert's ever done that. I don't know if he's ever took out all five at one time before. And he used to have it done to him. like
I'm just sitting here to say, what is verification? I don't want them to, you know, be in practice with weight vest and we're trying to teach them all these things. F all that.
I think this was the mulligan year for Hubert. Like, but next year, this is going, it's going to start getting real for Hubert. I mean, he is the head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. Like, he's got probably about that Duke win probably bought him a couple seasons.
I give him two. I honestly, if he does not only do you have to make the tournament next year, that's a gimme. But like, if you don't show some true progress with your guys that you're coaching, these are your crop, this is your batch that you've recruited. Yeah, we got to start asking some questions.
Yeah, because now it's going to start flipping over. Because really, the past 2 years, Hubert's been coaching Roy's team. Like, it's been Roy's recruits still there. And then COVID added a year, so you still kept, like, Leakey and others. Soon, though, you're going to start getting to these guys that he recruited. And the 2024 class is the number one rated class in the whole nation as it stands right now. You just got to wait a season to get to it. So we'll see. There's supposed to be Gigi Jackson coming in, right? So he's not in this class now, or he's not with us now.
Well, if you are a recruit and you see what's going on, does that make you want to run to North Carolina? Not really.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he landed those kids while this was going on. So something's going on.
Crazier things have happened. Coach Keats brings, you know, recruits a lot of great kids. They don't make it to NC State. So I just feel like it's a situation where at some point, especially the way NIL deals are working up and the way, like, you shoot. First of all, Caleb Love being a lethal shooter this summer, I think that told me everything I needed to know once I found that out about this season and how it wasn't going to go. I just truly feel like Hubert has to have a, like, sit down, get in his prayer closet, whatever he needs to do, and ask himself how he's going to better these guys. Because, like, the development has to be there. Not only just you went off a crapshoot. Like, I need to see the development.
That's true. Because I haven't really seen a lot of development other than RJ. RJ from freshman year to where he is now has taken that path that traditional UNC point guards usually take. They're usually the fastest guy on the floor. They usually can stretch the floor with their shooting. And they get better from year to year. So by the time they get the senior year, they're the true captain of the team. And I see RJ on that projection. But I don't know if he can get there with Caleb there beside him. I'd almost want him and Simeon Wiltshire in the backcourt. Let Armando stay. Jalen Washington plays the four. And you got either Puff or Dontre Styles at the three. I can roll with that with whatever on the bench.
Right. And I even like Seth Trimble. Like, I think that that dude, you know, he's figuring it out. He is like an RJ mini, but I can't see it flowing nicely with Caleb. And I think he's a great young man. I'm sure he will do well and be successful, but there's something, that tension there, it can't last.
And I will say this to end it though, too. Tar Heel Nation, please be nice to Caleb Love online. Like, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of stuff towards him that just don't deserve to be there. This dude is 20 years old, 21 years old. He's a kid, you know, like, he wasn't trying to lose games for North Carolina, and I see people coming at him that way. He'll always be a Tar Heel for life, for what he did and for what he's done in his career here, regardless of what happens. And even if he comes back, we need to support him. So follow Candace on Twitter at LockedOnACC for the latest on ACC sports. Candace, appreciate you coming by.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Coming up, Kevin Avery from the Four Man Rush will join us to talk about the latest in free agency signings for your Carolina Panthers. You are listening to the Franchise Players here on WTOB 96.7 FM and WWBG 1470 AM.
Franchise players are often referred to as the face of the franchise.
Welcome back into Franchise Players, TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com, WWBG 1470 AM, every Friday during your TGI Friday lineup. And with Franchise Players, if you missed it the first time at 5 o'clock, you can catch it at 6 p.m. over on WCOG 980 AM and 96.7 FM over in Winston-Salem, Forsyth County. I had to let that Delphonics ride a little bit before I came in. Shout out to Candace Cooper, who just came in with us to play a little stay or go UNC Tar Heel edition with the basketball team. Up to bat next, he is a founding member of the Four Man Rush, Kevin Avery in the house. Good Kev, what's going on, baby? How you doing?
Doing good, Des. Glad to be back.
Had to bring on a Panther expert and the Four Man Rush. If y'all aren't aware, a brand that started a couple years back. You can find them online pretty easily at this point. One of the best in film analysis, just all things Panthers. They're one of the best at it in the game. And I wanted to have Kev on more often to talk Panthers because, man, our Panthers are like all up in NFL news. Like, I'm not used to this in March. Usually they forget about us until like September, but like we're all up in it right now. So I wanted to focus more on, we talked about the Panthers trading up for the number one pick last week. Actually, Kev was on with me on Believe in Panthers on a bonus episode late last week that you can go find on the Tobacco Road Sports Radio YouTube channel. I wanted to go through the free agents that Carolina has signed this week. I would say like a drunken sailor, but they actually, all of them pretty much make sense. Like, they're not like crazy things we might've seen in the past where they basically were just buying patchwork free agents to just kind of plug in. These are guys that could potentially make impact immediately when they come through. I want to start off with one of the bigger ones, Kev, Miles Sanders, the young running back. He's only 25 years old. He signed a four-year, $25 million deal with the Panthers this week. Tell me a little bit about him. He's from Philly, and clearly it feels like the relationship with our new offensive assistant coach, running back coach Deuce Staley, who came from Philly, may have had something to do with this signing. What do you think about Miles Sanders?
Oh, with the signing of Miles Sanders, I just think that you're spot on with the Deuce Staley connection. As you know, Deuce Staley was a longtime assistant coach up under the Philadelphia Eagles. I think he was only in Detroit, I think maybe 1 year, maybe two. Yeah, but he was definitely – but, yeah, he was definitely definitely there when they drafted Miles Sanders. So he's definitely very familiar with him. So it wouldn't surprise me if he, quote, maybe pounded the table for him, you know, based on – you know, what they feel like, how they want to run the Panthers offense. Overall, I think that this gives you a lot more explosiveness, a lot more of the versatility that we had with the Christian McCaffrey. Now, mind you, I'm not saying that Miles Sanders is like Christian McCaffrey, but I'm saying as far as like the being able to catch the ball out of the backfield, being able to have that that speed to, you know, get one to the house. I definitely think that, you know, he does that. And, I mean, he's been pretty consistent, has stayed healthy. Definitely has put up some nice numbers. Just last year, he had 11 touchdowns, 1,269 yards, only 259 carries. So he's got a nice he's got a career average of 5 yards per carry. You know, he definitely can catch the ball out of the backfield. As well. So I just think that, you know, we got a new lead back. No, right. And still, they did say we do running back by committee, but I think it's a very solid fit for what we want to be doing.
It's crazy. Cause I was just praising you guys for, you know, how much you're on the internet. And I was pulling up my Facebook as you started talking. And the very first thing I see is a reshare from the 4-man rush from Adam Schefter. The Chicago Bears are signing former Panthers running back Deonta Foreman to a 1-year, $3 million deal. So for those who are asking, can they still sign Deonta? What does this mean regarding Deonta? I think they said the nice things, but once Miles became available, it looks like they were like, do we want Miles Sanders? Do we want Deonta Foreman? And they chose Miles. And you could tell giving them a 4-year deal basically sealed the fate for Deonta, in my opinion, because they still have Chuba Hubbard on a rookie deal, right?
Yeah, but just true, because I do have insight. They wanted to keep both, but I think that Deonta Foreman wanted more of a lead role than a shared role. It's kind of the early hearing about something, because actually what the Panthers offered is actually more than what he accepted at Chicago.
Oh. You think maybe he just didn't want to share carries like that, or?
It could be, since all of this has just happened within the last 30 minutes. I don't want to speak and speculate too much, but if you turn down more money, then it's obviously wasn't about the money as far as his decision. But yeah, I actually had shared that pretty much. Oh well, thanks for your contributions. We're we're moving forward, so.
Yeah, like, I mean, literally.
We'll see y'all in Chicago later on this year.
That's right. That's right. Kevin Avery from the 4-Man Rush joining us here on Franchise Players. Another free agent signing this week that I thought was super important, Deshaun Williams, the defensive tackle from Denver, signed with the Panthers on Wednesday. What that basically means is that Williams and Williams will basically play in the 3-4 opposite Derrick Brown. Shy Tuttle, who they signed last week, who's actually – played football at North Davidson from Midway, about 60 miles north of Charlotte, comes back home. He'll probably anchor the nose tackle spot. Tell me how big it was for the Panthers to sign Deshaun Williams, and give me a feel of the type of player he is coming from the Jiro Everose system in Denver. Kind of similar situation with Deuce and Miles Sanders kind of having a relationship already, right?
Yeah, with this one, actually you might he's kind of interchangeable. I can see why you said that he could play the nose. I mean, play the end, and Shai Tuttle could be playing the nose. Actually, they're both kind of interchangeable, but you essentially have your 3-man front going on right now, because, you know, now it's Derrick Brown, Shai Tuttle, and Williams. So for the 20% of the time that we are in base defense, this is what we're going to be. These are to be the three down linemen. that'll be featured whenever we're in the whenever we're in a 30 front. Now, I am a fan of who's already on the roster, who we did last year, McCall, as a big body at that nose. I think he's about 345, about 6'3".
Yeah. Oh, my Lord, Nada's running around. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're in a 3-4, you're three down lineman, you want them to be more solid, stout against the run versus more so, quote, pass rushing, because, you know, you got four linebackers that's there to essentially, quote unquote, make the play for you. You want to basically just occupy blocks and maintain your position. But again, another solid signing, you know, with Williams, you know, someone that Evero and Capers both worked with in Denver. He in the last month, if you look at his stats, says 4.5 sacks. He actually got all of those in the month of December.
Hey, and that was actually, if I remember, that was after Denver fired, what was his name? Franklin, or what was that? What was his name? He ended up with the Jets. Aaron Rodgers' old offense coordinator. He was the Nathaniel Hackett. But they fired Nathaniel Hackett, didn't they? And then whoever took over in interim, the Broncos actually started looking like a regular NFL team for the last month of the year. So maybe that had a little bit to do with it there. I do see he's 30, which is actually, gray hair, old man on this roster. I mean, the average age of this roster is like 25, 26. So that's the only drawback I can see. But I could see it where, you know, I said if they're going to bring in older vets, it's probably going to be on the defensive side, similar to like – when we first started with Dom Capers and like the Lamar Lathan, Kevin Green type of defenses, where it was just a lot, Sam Mills, where it was a lot of veterans just like all over the place, or even the some of the last Ron Rivera teams that had like Peanut Tillman and, you know, just like older grizzled veterans back there that kind of teach the young guys what to do. It feels like that might be leaning towards that kind of pick or pickup for them for that, which is perfectly fine concerning the age of this team. I was going over the front seven with somebody earlier today. So I didn't understand exactly how the 3-4 would look. And I was like, well, with this signing as it stands, it'd be like Williams, it'd be Tuttle, it'd be Derek Brown on your line, like with hands in the ground. And then you got some form of Brian Burns and I guess maybe Frankie Louvu on the ends. And then Jeremy Chinn and Shaq Thompson in the middle, but Chinn would be playing more like that Steelers Troy Polamalu hybrid type role where he's in the box, but he's really, you don't know where he is. He's all over the place. He might be in your backfield. He might be covering somebody out the slot, which is, I think, is Chinn's perfect role. So they got that plus the secondary with Von Bell, which they signed right when free agency opened at safety, pairing with Xavier Woods. Dante Jackson coming back from injury. You got J.C. Horn, so you got a shutdown corner. This defense, am I crazy to think this defense could be a top five defense next year?
At its very best, yes. Definitely top five. Easily capable of being top 10-ish, which we was kind of flirting with a little bit, in the post-rule era. Got a lot better. And then you didn't mention here, probably linebacker. I think the Brandon Smith would be a little bit more better fit at that other linebacker spot besides Shaq in a base 3-4. Kind of goes along with what he did, in college. With Jeremy Chinn, that's going to be your wild card. You know, that's kind of going to be kind of like your rover. You know, he can start off in the, you know, playing deep, and he can also walk up to the front. It's because Evero has already said that you don't want to pigeonhole Jeremy Chinn into just playing one particular spot, because that limits his playmaking and his versatility. So, you know, yeah, could see him at linebacker. Yeah, you're going to see him at big nickel. Yeah, you can see him at either free or strong safety. So I think that's where Jeremy Chinn's playmaking comes, when you use him versatile instead of saying, hey, put him at linebacker, or hey, just put him at safety.
You're a safety, yeah. Let the man right. Let the man ball.
You know, even though he has safety bloodline, because you know his uncle is a Hall of Famer, Steve Atwater.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right. Uh-huh. You know what? Something too. I forgot about. Didn't Shaq play safety in college too?
Yep, Shaq played safety now, and running back.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. I think he's a little more big bone now than he was in college. That's a whole different ballgame to play. What, 7-8 years in the NFL, and all of a sudden switch to safety, as opposed to getting switched coming out of college like he did, and Thomas Davis before him. Kevin Avery with us from the four-man rush here on Franchise Players. Let's skip down to, because yeah, they did sign Hayden Hurst, a tight end from Cincinnati. I think that's more of a mid-level type signing. They Ian Thomas took a pay cut, so he's going to still be on the team. I would say Hurst is a better tight end than Thomas or Tommy Trimble, who's still fairly young, going to year three, I think, for Tommy. So they'll have three tight ends on this roster as it stands right now. It sounds like Hurst is very physical. I think I saw some film from you or someone. It might have been John Ellis that showing Hurst on a Bengals play. It was like a run play. He started off on one side of the line, and after the ball was snapped, just literally beeline down the line to take out like a blitz or somebody, and he about rips this dude's like upper torso off in terms of like the impact that he had. I was like, oh, he's one of those dudes. So I can see why they brought him in. I wanted to skip down before I got you out of here to Andy Dalton. The Panthers signed Andy Dalton to a 2-year, $10 million deal, includes $8 million fully guaranteed. For starters, can you please, in layman's terms, explain to Panther Nation why Andy Dalton is not going to be the starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers in 2023? Because all I see is people going, why are they signing Andy Dalton? Why don't they draft a quarterback? They're going to do that too. We needed a backup quarterback, and we don't have one. So Andy Dalton came into play. Can you kind of explain like what they're doing with the Andy Dalton signing?
Yeah, with the Andy Dalton signing, I mean, you're getting that accomplished veteran that has, you know, bounced around a little bit the last few years of his career, but the first 9 years, definitely one of the, you know, top 10 to 12 quarterbacks in the league. You know, a lot of what he's going to bring is going to be like leadership and value. Like, he was drafted to be the face of the franchise for a struggling Cincinnati Bengals team. That type of, you know, pressure, understanding, that's what he can pass on to who our first overall pick is going to be at quarterback. You know, this is more of a signing for, you know, mentorship, you know, let him know what, you know, how to handle expectations, you know, because, you know, the Panthers franchise has been struggling, you know, for the last 5 years. We haven't had a winning season since 2017. And here it is coming up on the 2023 season. So, yeah, so we've been starving for a while. So there's going to be some expectations with whoever we draft with the number one overall pick. So Andy Dalton is just more so someone that's capable of knowing that is at this stage of his career, you know, if I'm called into play, great. But if not, I'm going to be here to make sure whoever is starting is going to be well prepared. But even if something comes up where he has to play, if you look at his play last year with the Saints, I mean, take away the fact that they played for a division rival, he himself had a pretty solid year, 18 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, a 67% completion. I mean, a 98% quarterback passer rating. That's solid numbers. If I put like this, if any Panthers quarterback would have put up those type of numbers in the last three seasons, we likely was a playoff team.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, easily. Easy, because I think the most touchdowns that Teddy Bridgewater had was 15 in 2020. You know, with the, you know, Sam Darnold, I forgot how many he had in 2021. I think it was like maybe like 10 or 11. I mean,
wasn't that early? Yeah.
Right. You know, and then, you know, the whole thing, you know, with Baker, I only know if he threw what, maybe 2 or 3 while he was here. And, you know, then PJ Walker had a couple. I mean, it's, yeah, like I said, 18 touchdowns and only 9 interceptions would have definitely probably put the Panthers in the playoffs any one of the last 3 years. So his play is definitely not flashy, going to make you put him on any type of fantasy team, but it's just what you expect at a veteran at this stage of his career.
Tell them where they can find your stuff online, Kev, for the 4-Man Rush.
Yeah, definitely. Our main Twitter page is 4, so that's the number 4, O-U-R-M-A-N-R-U-S-H. That's the our main Twitter account. My Twitter account is 4MR_country. That's spelled with a K, KOUNTRY, Kev, KEV. You can follow us there. You can also catch us on Facebook, The 4-Man Rush, as well. Also catch us on Instagram, and also check out our YouTube channel as well. So that's definitely where you can catch us at. Oh, yeah, and our own website, the4manrush.com.
They got like merchandise and all kinds of good stuff over there. Like I said, if you're a diehard Panthers fan, and I'll leave the segment with this. You're going to hear a lot of stuff from the national media over the next month or so regarding the Panthers that just isn't true. Like, if you follow the Panthers, you know it when you hear, like, Aaron Rodgers ain't coming here, like that kind of stuff. Like, they're just going to attach everything to us.
Oh, my God, yes.
If you really, really want, like, the real, like, in terms of what's going on, follow the people that are following the team every day, the ones that know the ins and outs, the ones that are in the building, Four-Man Rush, Skylar Callahan from Sports Illustrated, John Ellis, us over at the Believe in Panthers podcast. There's a few more that are out there. Sheena Quick. Follow the ones that are following the team and actually have connects with the team instead of national media that are basically guessing. They're throwing darts at a dartboard and hoping that one of them sticks so they can come back after the draft. Like, I told you they were going to take CJ Stroud, blah, blah, blah. They really don't know.
Yeah. And also Mike Kay of the Observer. He's another.
Yeah, he's newer guy. He's picked up that beat. And that's been mm-hmm. some very famous people on that beat. Elena Getzenberg, she's been on here a bunch of times before she took off. Brendan Marks, before he left for The Athletic, was on that beat. So that's a very legacy type of beat to follow with the Panthers. So definitely Mike Kay. I got to grab him sometime soon. Kev, appreciate you being on, man. Like I said, I'm having you on more often, especially as we get closer to the draft, because there's going to be a lot of Panther content to kind of wade through. Appreciate you being on, bro.
Hey, thanks for the invite. Look forward to the next time, Dez. Keep pounding.
Coming up, more from Franchise Players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com and WWBG 1470 AM. You're in the middle of TGIF.